going to go ahead and call this meeting of the Energy and Climate, or Climate and Energy Committee to order. We do not yet have a quorum. We do have a quorum. I guess we have a quorum. And so first we have on the agenda is the meeting minutes. Representative Kraft, did you have a chance to look at the meeting minutes from February 15th?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would move their approval.
Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So we have two bills on the agenda today. And first up, we have House File 749 with Representative Ryer. And so I'll go ahead and move House File 749 be re-referred to the Committee on Sustainable Development. Welcome to committee, Representative Ryer. Can you please tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Chair Akam and committee members. House File 749 provides an update to Minnesota's sustainable building guidelines to include climate change resilience guidelines. These updates are offered as part of the process outlined in statute to periodically review and update the guidelines. You'll hear more from our testifiers about the rationale for and direction of this current round of updates. However, I'd like to set the stage by highlighting the need. We're seeing increases in extreme weather events, flooding and wildfires. Minnesota is warmer and wetter than ever, and the risks to our built infrastructure are rising accordingly. We have the opportunity to move forward responsibly by putting guidelines in place that anticipate and address these risks. Now, as you know, the Office of the Legislative Auditor issued an evaluation report about the Sustainable Building Guidelines just this month. While many improvement opportunities were identified and will warrant future attention, the update process embodied in this bill was not a focus of their recommendations. However, as we move this bill forward, there may be some minor changes incorporated. Now I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers to speak more about the needs addressed by these modifications. Thank you, Chair and members. I'll look forward to your questions and appreciate your support.
So first we have Richard Graves, Director of the Center for Sustainable Building Research from the University of Minnesota. Welcome to committee, Mr. Graves. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Richard Graves. I'm the Director of the Center for Sustainable Building Research at the University of Minnesota. And we oversee the B3 guidelines that that provide guidelines for state capital construction. As this bill outlines, historically, those guidelines have been focused on just sustainability with state construction. And increasingly, what we are seeing a need to address more than just sustainability, but also resilience in those guidelines. In 2018, we did a study by MPCA that looked at what was the intersection between high-performance buildings that are outlined in the B3 guidelines, and what are things that the guidelines would need to consider in order to incorporate resilience. And through that process and in those recommendations, had a series of recommendations for the guidelines. But the challenge that we have is only those recommendations that can increase the sustainability and resilience of state construction can be integrated into the B3 guidelines. And any improvements, things like incorporating some of the fortified standards to improve roof construction and wall construction to resist wind loads, incorporating future weather files that may improve resilience but maybe not necessarily improve energy efficiency, and other site guidelines that may not necessarily be connected entirely to sustainability but might just have resilience benefits, were prevented from integrating into the B3 guidelines with the current language that this bill changes. So we see a real benefit to state construction by adding resilience to sustainability when considering guidelines and improvements to the quality of state construction. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Next speaker we have is Aurora Vatran with 100% Campaign. Welcome back to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Aurora Vautrin, and I am the Legislative and Political Director for the Minnesota 100% campaign. Thank you, Chair Acomb, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today. And thank you, Representative Ryer, for your leadership on this bill that would add climate change resilience to our state's sustainable building guidelines. Our campaign supports House File 749 because for the buildings Minnesota invests in to be truly sustainable, they ought to be both climate adapted and climate resilient. Our state has taken historic action to address climate change, and we're doing the work to prevent the most detrimental impacts we would face if we don't change course. But we know that the people of Minnesota are already experiencing the impacts of climate change and that they will get worse, as the efforts of our actions to address the crisis catch up to the impacts already set in motion by generations of emissions. Minnesota's future will see increasing windstorms, extreme heat, and larger, more sudden precipitation events, and these impacts affect our built infrastructure in concrete ways. Increased freeze-thaw cycles affect roofs and building materials, more hot and humid days affect air quality, larger rain events will affect drainage systems and basements, hail and wind can cause damage to building exteriors. All of these risks need to be considered as we're building the infrastructure that we will be relying on to keep us safe and sheltered when these extreme weather events happen. Representative Ryer's bill will ensure that our buildings are designed for the future we face, prevent wasted state financial resources, and lowering living and working conditions for Minnesotans. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, any questions or comments from committee members for our author? Seeing none, any closing comments from Representative Ryer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the support to move this forward. It's a good housekeeping bill that keeps us positioned for the future. Thank you.
My motion that House File 749 be re-referred to the Committee on Sustainable Development. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay.
No.
Motion prevails and your bill is on its way. Thank you. Next on the agenda we have House File 1386, Representative Hollins. And as you're getting yourself situated, I will maybe just say Representative Hollins moves House File 1386 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. And I believe Representative Hollins has an amendment coded DE3.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Representative Hollins moves the DE3 to get the bill in the shape she would like. Any discussion to that? All those in favor of adopting the DE3 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Hollins, you also have an oral amendment?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Can you go ahead and state your oral amendment?
Sure. On line 2.13, I would like to delete 2022 and insert 2023.
Great. Well, staff, read that back, please, Mr. Elof. Oh, sorry. Should we go ahead with this and then your question? Mr. Elof.
Madam Chair, page 2, line 13, delete 2022 and insert 2023.
Any discussion to the oral amendment? Representative Suzuki?
Madam Chair, we just view this as a technical amendment, so it's not a big deal.
Great. All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion prevails. So, Representative Hollins, with that, tell us about your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair Acomb, and thank you, committee members. This is the energy storage bill. It is a energy storage bill, sorry. I say the because I had the same bill, a similar bill last year, and I didn't really get as much time as we wanted to discuss it, and so I'm hoping that we can do a little bit more of that today. As I think most of you know, energy storage is a critical aspect of addressing climate change and moving to 100% clean energy. As many of our colleagues on this committee have pointed out, the sun is not always shining and the wind is not always blowing, and you can't flip them on immediately when you need more power. So that's where energy storage comes in. The deployment of energy storage would overcome one of the biggest obstacles in renewable energy. It's cycling between oversupply and shortage. By smoothing imbalances between supply and demand, batteries could eventually replace fossil fuel plants that have to kick in for a few hours when energy demand peaks. It is a key to expanding the reach of renewables and speeding the transition to a carbon-free power grid. And I want to note that ultimately storage is an enabling technology. It saves consumers money, improves reliability and resilience, and integrates generation sources and helps reduce environmental impacts. So the bill before you is fairly dense, and I have it broken down into different sections. So I'm going to go ahead and just try to work through those and then have testifiers if that's okay.
Great.
Fantastic. Okay, section one directs the Public Utilities Commission to clarify the definition on how the capacity of a storage system is calculated. So this section standardizes the treatment of storage systems across the state rather than a patchwork of different treatments depending on the utility territory a Minnesotan lives in. So currently, different utilities treat systems in different ways. If you have a system that could inject 40 kilowatts of capacity on the grid but is limited to non-export setting, then some utilities will define that as a 40-kilowatt system and others would treat it as a 0-kilowatt system. The difference comes down to nameplate capacity versus export capacity. And so defining a system based on export capacity, you're looking at how much a system will produce and not how much it could produce, which is an important distinction. This type of problem is especially common with any nascent technology, and it's important to get this right to standardize our approach on how we regulate energy storage, and that regulation must reflect the ways in which storage is actually being used by customers. Section 2 is the feeder line replacement, which would require public utilities to utilize storage when they're already making upgrades to the distribution grids. We've had a number of conversations about this, and I would like to note for the committee that this is one of the aspects of this bill that we are willing to be very flexible on. I've talked to a number of utilities about this. And we've agreed that it is potentially more important that we have a goal for energy storage number-wise rather than telling utilities how they need to reach that goal. And so we are willing to remove this aspect of the language. We just haven't done it yet. So I'm not going to go in depth on that because I kind of expect that we're going to be pulling that part of the bill. That's okay. Section 3 is energy storage, the peak shaving tariffs. So we are going to require the PUC process to determine the fair market value of distributed storage dispatching energy during peak demand when the grid is most stressed and when generating new energy is most expensive. This ultimately should save ratepayers money and fairly compensate storage owners for the value they provide to the grid. Xcel in Colorado runs a similar pilot program. A utility on the East Coast runs a full-fledged program. And so this would be new to Minnesota, but it's not really a new idea nationwide. Section 4 is energy storage system deployment targets. So it establishes an energy storage target of 30,000 megawatts by 2033, so that's 10 years from now, for all utilities required to file an integrated resource plan with the PUC. Again, this is where we get to where we're creating a target for energy storage as opposed to telling utilities how they need to achieve that target. This provision establishes the target will guide the state to achieving its necessary development of in-state energy storage resources in Minnesota to enable and support clean energy transition. The number of megawatts each utility must contribute to this overall goal will be determined by the PUC based on the number of customers the utility serves. So we're trying to get at equity here because we recognize that not all utilities serve the same number of people, and we want to make sure that we're being as fair and equitable as possible. This section retains PUC oversight over the deployment of these storage goals by having utilities submit specific reports and plans to the PUC. The PUC can approve, modify, or reject a plan if the commission determines that it's not in the public interest and it's not prudent for ratepayers. This is an important aspect of what we're looking to do because we know that ratepayers are going to be the main contributors to making this happen, and we want to make sure that we are being respectful of Minnesotans and the amount that they have to pay for their energy. Section 5 adds that the above procurement target to the utility's integrated resources plan. Section 6 creates a new incentive program for small storage systems in XL territory, utilizing the RDA account to jumpstart the adoption of residential and small commercial storage. It's similar to XL's small solar initiative, solar incentive program. Gosh, I'm struggling. The solar rewards program that began years ago. So early solar adopters needed an incentive to go solar. And now that the program performance-based incentives pay a little more than market value for the renewable energy credit. So storage is an early adopt. It is in an early adopter phase right now, but by incentivizing it, we can jumpstart adoption of a technology that provides resiliency to our grid and our homes and can provide power when it's needed most. Sections 7 through 18 are simply adding large storage to the PUC permitting process. So it's a lot of just technical components. It adds a definition of the energy storage system to the Minnesota Power Plant Sitting Act for storage systems above 5,000 kilowatts. So it changes that definition, and then it adds that to all the other definitions of the PUC. So it's just technical. It's long, but that's what's going on. And then Section 19 is an appropriation for storage incentive program. So it's just the money that would be used for that Section 6, we're calling it storage rewards, like solar rewards. So that would be the appropriation for that program. And the final thing that I wanted to note was that we don't currently have a fiscal note for this. It's being reviewed by the, I cannot remember the name of it.
Legislative Budget Office.
Yes, I was like the LBO, whatever that stands for. It's being reviewed by the LBO, but we anticipate getting it shortly. And I know that this needs to go to Environment Committee, so we'll certainly have it by then.
Great. And before we go to testifiers, Representative Susinski.
Madam Chair, just again, the idea that we don't have a fiscal note, the idea that, you know, this is, you know, a bill that we've seen before, I think in the past, maybe not have a hearing, but it has been dropped. This is a fiscal committee, and, what we think about this, and it's not proper. So that would be moving a bill out of a committee without a fiscal note.
And it will be coming back to this committee, and we will have that at that point. Representative Hollins?
And I would like to apologize because I know that this is important, and we did ask for a rush fiscal note on this when we realized that we were going to have a hearing on it, and I do apologize that it didn't get here in time. So I understand that frustration.
So as we go to testifiers, first up we have Madeline Smerillo with Clean Grid Alliance. I'm not seeing, so we'll go to Logan O'Grady, Executive Director with Mencia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madeline is not here today. I think she submitted written testimony as well.
Thank you.
And our other testifier, Noah Roberts, is not here as well due to the weather. So
okay.
It's just me. So for the record, I am Logan O'Grady, Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. Just as a reminder, Mencia is a 501c6 trade organization. We represent 140 companies throughout the state of Minnesota that work within and throughout the solar and energy storage industry. Unlike other SIA chapters from around the country, we haven't changed our name yet. Most are the Solar and Storage Association now. We still are just solar, but we do work across solar and storage industries. First, thanks to Representative Hollins for being our storage champion the last couple of years. It's been great to work with you, and you've become the storage guru of the House, so it's pretty fun. And then also to our partner organizations, Clean Grid Alliance and American Clean Power, who also supported this bill as well. I'm going to be really quick because I know people want to get out of here. Really, this bill, we bring an industry perspective again to this discussion. This bill really does two things for the industry in our mind. It sets the ground rules for storage and how to deploy storage in Minnesota, which is really important if we're trying to attract businesses here, encourage storage deployment by consumers and by Minnesotans. We have to know how to define things. How do they count storage capacity limitations on their houses or on their projects? How do we compensate people for the storage that they ultimately sell back to the grid and help their neighbors and help the utilities in times of peak demand? So again, ground rules are important, and we're really glad to see this bill move forward and set those ground rules. The second thing that this does, and I talk about this a lot from an industry perspective, there are business signals within this bill. The procurement targets tell everybody throughout the country that we are a great place to do business for energy storage companies. Ultimately, Minnesota is in a 50-state marketplace. We're competing against 50 other states, 50 other markets for businesses, business owners, entrepreneurs, workers to go. We want them to choose Minnesota instead of anywhere else to come. And then it creates an incentive program, which is really important for nascent industries, as Representative Hollins touched on. We want to get these new technologies deployed quickly so we can study them even more, understand how to make them work more efficiently, more effectively. And if people are willing to make those investments early, because it is still a significant cost, even with an incentive program, that just helps our grid, helps Minnesotans who want to take more independence over their energy use. I know I have some members here that would love to testify, and so I defer to them, but I can stick around. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. O'Grady. Next on the list, we have Rayo Codidena, is that right? Yes, my apologies if I didn't say that properly, from Raycon Energy. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rao Codidena. I'm an independent energy consultant, and I live in Roseville. I worked at the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, the grid operator MISO, for 15 years. And I've followed energy storage for nearly 15 years since Xcel announced its Luverne wind to battery project in 2008. The storage industry has come a long way in the past decade. And I've also participated in the Department of Commerce funded energy storage study in 2019. One of the reasons why energy storage is taking off is because the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, issued an order 841 in late 2020, which mandates that energy storage can participate in the wholesale markets. Behind the meter storage, as small as 100 kW, can participate in MISO markets. This order 841 allows energy storage to participate in wholesale and retail markets by providing different services. Like a Swiss Army knife, energy storage has multiple uses for the transmission and distribution grid. On the distribution feeder level, discharging a battery during peak demand hours from, let's say, 4 p.m. through 8 p.m. can reduce the need for adding another feeder. And Xcel has successfully tested this feeder reduction in Colorado at its Panasonic solar site. Also, customers can use batteries on the distribution system as backup power. This backup power is used for commercial and industrial customers during grid emergencies. Customers with backup power will rely less on our utilities, freeing up the utility to help those in need. Adding energy storage to customers' rooftop solar allows them to use more solar. For example, plug-in electric vehicles can be charged from solar using storage systems. Another benefit of storage is that it can reduce the impact of demand charges on customers by reducing peak demand. At the transmission grid, storage reduces the transmission charges our consumers have to pay because storage avoids the MISO operator's curtailment of utility scale wind and solar. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next on the list, we have Alex Gast with Cedar Creek Energy. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Hello. I'm Alex Gast. I'm with Cedar Creek Energy. We are a developer and EPC electrical contractor out of Blaine, Minnesota. We're a company of around 65 employees. We're growing. And part of the reason I wanted to come here today and talk and testify was what's important with this bill is not just clean energy, but it's creating a standard. Currently in our state for energy storage, all the different utilities are playing by different rules. If you go in McLeod Electrical Co-op and you want to put a battery in, they will limit the size of your system based on the inverter and the battery. They'll add them together cumulatively, which is prohibitive for customers. We have one customer in particular in this co-op who wanted to put in solar batteries to power his home, to water his cattle, and he was unable to do that due to basically a definition discrepancy in the current code. So picking a standard and adhering to it is one of the most important things that we can do financially and technically to help move energy storage and grid resiliency forward in the state of Minnesota. Another example, safety. If you're a firefighter, you show up to someone's house and they're on fire, different utilities require different types of disconnects. Some service territories, depending on the area, have multiple different services. You know, Xcel in one area, East Central in another. If there's not a standard that the utilities and the cooperatives are held to, it makes it extremely hard for first responders to safely enter a property by not having a single standard to adhere to. So Section 1 of this bill is extremely important to our industry. It's extremely important to Minnesota. It'll let consumers put batteries in, maintain resiliency, be sustainable, and operate independently of any grid functions. So that's really the most important thing to me, and I think people in the state of Minnesota. So.
Thank you, Mr. Gass. Next, we have Betsy Engelking with National Grid Renewables. Welcome back to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
All right. Thanks, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am pleased to be here to speak in support of House File 1386. You know, every once in a while in the energy business, something that we call pretty amazing new stuff comes along, or PANs. And this bill mirrors the way that the legislature has handled this pretty amazing new stuff in the past. In 2007, it was wind, or largely wind, although it wasn't restricted to wind. In 2013, it was solar. And so now we sit before you and say storage is the new technology that is ready and able to help you implement the bill that you passed and that Governor Walz signed earlier in this session for 100% clean energy by 2040. I hear a lot of talk in these committees about baseload plants. There is nothing magic about baseload plants. They're simply plants that cost a lot to build, and it's because they cost so much to build, to keep the energy price at a reasonable level, you have to crank out as much energy as you can. So 24/7, 365 days a year if you can. They also tend to be less flexible than other resources. You can produce energy around the clock with a combination of resources, and previous last 3 or 4 years in the market, it's pretty clear that you can do it more cost effectively with a combination of resources rather than operating a single coal or nuclear plant. That's why we have so many people proposing to close coal plants as being uneconomic. That's why we have so many nuclear plants going to their states to seek subsidies in order to continue operating. They can't make the money in the market because it's cheaper to do it otherwise. We do know that clean energy resources are variable in nature. They need to be combined with some kind of dispatchable power in order to provide customers with an uninterrupted supply of electricity. Storage is one of those dispatchable power resources that can help us provide 100% clean power. It can be charged by clean power. Once it's discharged, it hasn't changed, it's still clean power. Energy from wind and solar facilities can charge batteries when their energy isn't needed by customers and discharge it when it is needed. Energy storage is already cost competitive with other generation technologies. The 2021 Lazard levelized cost of storage lists the unsubsidized capital cost of a 100 megawatt 1 hour battery as low as $55 a kilowatt. A 4 hour battery would, which more closely aligns with how a peaking plant is operated, is about $126 a kilowatt right now. This compares favorably with MISO's cost of new entry, which for 2023 is at $104 a kilowatt. Storage is here. It's getting it's getting more efficient. It's getting less expensive, very similar to the other technologies that we've dealt with previously. Storage is modular, and it can be put in one place, or, you know, it can be small or it can be large. It can be attached directly to the distribution system. It can avoid substation upgrades. It can be placed with generation and run as a net zero facility. There are hundreds of sites in Minnesota right now where you could put in batteries and not cause any disruption to the distribution system, as long as you're saying not going to run more than whatever the 5 megawatts or the 2 megawatts that we have at a time. House File 1386 puts us on the path of 100% clean energy, and I strongly recommend that you pass this bill.
Thank you, and let's go to public comment. First up, we have Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I've got a lot to say or a little to say. I want to be respectful of your time. I was told perhaps I'd have a two-minute limit. I don't know if that's the limit I've got. I've just used half of it, so I apologize for that. First of all, let me just say that Xcel Energy, I hope it's not a surprise to you on this committee, that Xcel Energy supports the use of batteries. They think storage is part of our future. It's part of our planning. It's already part of what we're doing. Having said that, however, there is an excellent process already existing in Minnesota that determines how best to deploy this resource. It's called the Integrated Resource Plan. You've heard about it before. It is a very sophisticated program. It is very detailed, and it is also a very public program where dozens of interveners get to intervene in the process. They get to ask questions. They get to submit testimony. They get to do their own modeling. This is done by engineers and computer scientists. This is not done by the flip of a coin. It is, we think, well, and I should say, after more than a year of gathering evidence on how best to serve our customers, the PUC issues an order that tells us how to deploy all of the various resources at our disposal, including energy storage. And then we undertake that, but almost at that same time, we start developing the next resource plan, so that this is a constantly updating process of determining what resources we should have. And as we discussed the 100 by 2040 bill, I heard a lot of people talking about affordability and reliability. The resource planning process is laser focused on affordability and reliability to accomplish these goals. Unfortunately, under this bill, Section 4 replaces that resource planning process with an arbitrary number in an arbitrary year for a certain kind of resource, regardless of whether it is the most affordable or reliable way to reach 100% carbon-free by 2040. We would very much like to work with the author and the committee to see if we can't accomplish the goals of making sure we're deploying batteries, but do it within the framework of the integrated resource plan, where hours and hours and hours of state and utility and private time is put against determining how this should be done across the state of Minnesota. We also, you should know, have something called an integrated distribution plan. We recognize the value of that batteries can have in distribution. I'm happy to hear that Representative Hollins is interested in either pulling or working on this, because the problem is that is also an engineering decision. There are places where you might replace the feeder and you don't need battery storage. It adds no value. Other places you might put two batteries and not replace the feeder at all. And that's an engineering decision, and that's where it should be made in the integrated distribution plan. I'm going to miss something here, but that, you know, I'd be happy to answer questions. The last thing I'd like to mention is sections 1, 3, and 6, which combined talk, you know, are how we set up the sort of batteries in your home, batteries in your business. These programs in the past have unfortunately often turned into inequitable programs for a whole bunch of reasons. So there's just a couple of things I would recommend the committee think about. First of all, this should not be an Xcel-only plan. If this is a good idea for the state, it's a good idea for the state. It should not be funded through the RDA. It should be funded through the utilities. If this is the policy that you want to pursue to jumpstart this industry, let's jumpstart it across the state. Otherwise, you run the risk of creating, or rather exacerbating, inequities that already exist in the system, because so many of these programs seem to be Xcel Energy programs exclusively and not shared with the rest of the state. Secondly, what often happens in these programs is the benefits flow to a small number of people who tend to be either businesses or wealthy people, and the costs are borne by people who are not businesses or wealthy people. We think there's a way to design a battery incentive program to jumpstart this industry that helps the people who need the help most. People who don't necessarily have roofs, don't necessarily have basements, don't necessarily have a lot of property where they can deploy batteries, but where they could benefit from the program by reducing their energy bills. These kinds of programs far too often leave those people behind because they're not good customers for this, because they don't own roofs, they rent, or because they don't have basements or garages to deploy these things. So we would look forward very much to working with the author and the committee to try to put together an equitable, fair, reasonable battery incentive program that assists customers who otherwise are going to be left behind. There's quite a bit more I could say about this bill. There's a lot of work to be done on it. We've met with Representative Hollins, and she's shown a great willingness to do that. We know it's coming back to this committee, and we look forward to further discussions about it. With that, I'll end my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Representative Susan? No, okay.
There's more public testimony.
One more, yep. Kevin Prentice is up with LIUNA. Next testifier, welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Akam. Committee members, Kevin Prentice on behalf of LIUNA, Minnesota, North Dakota. I think the representatives on this committee understand how seriously we take the energy transition. Our organization supported the 100% clean energy bill because we believed it allowed for a flexible, feasible path to clean energy that preserved reliability and affordability. And as we look at all of the other policy proposals in energy that the legislature is considering, our first question is whether the policy makes it easier or harder to accomplish that 100% goal affordably and reliably. And we want to thank Representative Hollins for bringing forward a bill that includes provisions to standardize the rules for siting and storage under the Public Utility Commission. The Public Utilities Commission offers consistency and transparency and helps maximize public benefits, and I think that will go a long way toward making it easier to deploy storage. I think that's the strongest part of the bill in our view. We are particularly excited about the opportunities for storage, as well as a number of technologies, including advanced nuclear, including carbon capture, but battery storage, especially iron air batteries, like Form Energy is using, that are being deployed by Great River Energy and by Xcel. If those batteries turn out to work the way that it looks like they could work, those could really transform our whole energy system. I think the key word, as the Form folks understand as well, is if. We don't know yet exactly what role the batteries can play, as well as other technologies. The 100% bill and the Federal Inflation Reduction Act provide all the incentives that we believe utilities need in order to move in the direction of more energy storage as well as other new technologies. In terms of the other aspects of the bill, we do have concerns about the impacts both on the transmission side of the system, the utility scale side, and the distribution side. We think everyone already agrees storage is part of the solution. The question is how much we should pay and when. And our concern is that by setting a 3,000 megawatt target at this point, we risk buying batteries earlier, paying more for them, potentially buying into the wrong technologies without giving ourselves the time that the Public Utility Commission process allows us to move forward with. And I would really encourage folks, I think we should really trust the 100% bill and trust the commission to tackle all of these issues, because that's already a conversation that's been happening for years at the commission. Every resource plan looks at storage as an option and looks at the pricing and looks at how it could fit into the system and be beneficial. And I think that that's the best way that we could move forward, and consistent with what we told utilities during the 100% bill, which was that they would have the flexibility to decide, and their communities and their stakeholders or their regulators would decide in each instance what was the best way to move forward. On the question of the distribution grid batteries, there I think we have sort of deep concerns about what costs those bring and who the beneficiaries are. Because in our experience, and I think that's supported by the research, for example, in Minnesota Power's territory, most of the beneficiaries of solar rooftop programs are affluent homeowners and businesses, right? And that's great. It's good that those folks have rooftop solar, but our members who don't have, who don't have as much money and who aren't businesses end up generally paying the subsidies for folks who do. As we read the current version of the bill and the distribution batteries, it would incentivize and facilitate investments that folks who have the money can afford to make and help pay those folks back to make those investments beneficial to them. But it's not clear that there's an overall sort of like public benefit to other folks. And so we, again, we support use of the commission process through the distribution plans because there is a place, we think, for batteries on the distribution system. But that should be done in a way that maximizes public benefit to all rather than simply trying to create business opportunities on the system. And I appreciate that there's a lot of folks who want to start providing batteries and solar on the system, and that's great. But we're not building the system to create business opportunities for folks to leverage the system. It's being built to serve all of us and being built to serve those with the least resources, which I think is critical. And so appreciate Representative Holland's work on the bill. Hope to continue to work on that and move forward with lots more storage in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. Any further testimony to this bill? Not seeing any. We'll go to Representative's comments. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the time. And appreciate just all the folks that were willing to come. You know, this bill is pretty concerning to me. You know, I appreciate your willingness to carry it, Representative Hollins. But, you know, I think, you know, from the last testimony and the previous testimony, you know, it appears that we have an opportunity to, during the age of VCR and Betamax, this bill might put us into the Betamax category when it comes to technology, potentially a superior one, but one that ultimately doesn't cut the cake. And, you know, I think the idea that we're going to create market certainty for the business owners of those that wish to install these batteries on the backs of ratepayers is really a shame. You know, especially from the lower income side, those folks that probably can least expense it, businesses that can least in a competitive market handle it. You know, if we believe in the market, if we believe in utilities to do this, we should kind of allow them to best, you know, we've seen some showboat stuff around the state. We have the one on Highway 10, the integrated system where it's battery and it's solar. I think it's Conexus territory. Those things are fun. But this is a real deal bill, and this is not going to make folks' rates cheaper. This has a place potentially, but by creating another whole system, there are parts of this bill that I think could have some common sense and bipartisan support when it comes to maybe some of the generalizations and how it should be in someone's home so that we don't kill firefighters. I think we could all agree that that's a positive thing. But the idea that we're going to say, well, you have to do 3,000 megawatts to create market certainty for big players here on the backs of ratepayers, I think is just a really a shame. And I would ask the members in this committee to, you know, not support it. So, thank you.
Representative Collins, did you want to respond to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Swazinski. I understand your hesitancy in this. I do. I have a couple of responses. So, the first thing is, I think we have to recognize that, especially when we're talking about large utilities, they're corporate entities, right? And a corporation has a duty, a fiscal responsibility to be making money. They have a duty to a certain group, and we have a duty beyond that as legislators. And so really what we're trying to accomplish here is not, sometimes entities have to be pushed, right, to do something that we know is the right thing for our communities and for the goal that we have set with 100% clean energy. And so, I mean, I've had a number of conversations with utilities from across the entire state, and I plan on continuing to have those conversations because I think there's a lot that we can learn from each other and a lot of ways that we can make this bill better. But I do think that I believe that it is my responsibility to move us forward in this area. And if that means that we are not going to see eye to eye on everything, I'm okay with that. You know, I think that the market certainty has benefits to ratepayers as well. I mean, we talk about jobs, we talk about labor economy, and the reality is people who are doing this work, whether they are from outside the state or whether they are entities from within the state that are looking to get into this industry, need to have consistency. Right? They need to have expectations and consistency. And those expectations and consistency are things that we as legislators, I believe, should be bringing forward, because it's going to bring jobs. It's going to create an industry in Minnesota, and an industry that, frankly, we're in competition with the entire country. And I have talked to people who are in this industry who are leaving the state of Minnesota because they don't know what to expect, and they don't know how to move forward in this sort of wild, wild west situation of energy storage. And so I do think that while it is difficult to create those, you know, create that expectation, I also recognize that I think it's really necessary for us to do that. The other thing I wanted to point out was, and maybe this isn't directly addressing your concerns, so I apologize, but you know, when we talk about energy storage, yes, it's in their integrated resource plans, but that's because we required it in 2019. We passed a bill that said you have to have energy storage incorporated into your integrated resource plans. And so asking them to take the next step to actually execute some of those plans, I don't think is actually going too far. We have 17 years to get to this goal of 100% clean energy. And if we're waiting for the right technology to come, we're going to get 10 years down the line and say, oh, but the technology is going to be so much better in 10 more years. And that's going to continue forever, right? Because, you know, to your point, Betamax, VHS, DVD, whatever the other one was that I don't even know what it's called anymore. But I mean, like, we're constantly upgrading our technology. And at some point, we just have to bite the bullet and move forward, because this is something that we are absolutely going to need in order for us to make those goals and in order for us to become a cleaner economy that's safer for all Minnesotans. That's my opinion, I guess. I should put that as a caveat.
And I will just say I appreciate that you're willing to continue to work with people who have concerns, and so I am glad those conversations will continue. Yeah. Representative Susan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just I would, you know, I'm not actually sat in a lot of the PUC's decision-making process when they review and investigate, you know, the resource plans by the utilities, and I would not consider that a Wild Wild West scenario, you know, when it comes to those. And so, you know, that characterization I don't think is fair to them, and I'm not coming at it as someone that always agrees with what they say. But, you know, I think foundationally, you know, we have to look at, you know, where the money's coming from. Who's going to, you know, you mentioned a little bit about utilities and cost, and that they're a large corporation that have, a responsibility to their shareholders. But, you know, I think, you know, one of the biggest things we do have is a responsibility to ratepayers, because regardless, if any mandate that we do increases the cost, we can say, hey, you know what, we're going to get that corporation or business or whatever they do, we're going to get them. We're going to show them who's boss because we're in charge. Ultimately, those costs get passed on to their consumers. That's people that you represent. That's people that I represent. And by taking our thumb, we all have a thumb. We vote with our finger, but we always put our thumb on the scale for something, whether that's wind over solar over wind, when we say, you're going to build solar, by golly, because we know what's best. Even though that if we want green energy, why do we care? Why do we care? I mean, from a cheap standpoint, if this is cheap, well, then we should just be building wind up the wazoo. But instead, we take our thumb, we take our finger first, then we take our thumb and put the scales down and say, this is what you're going to do because we know best. And this seems like another one of them, we know best. And you know what? We're going to have batteries here and there. They're not going to look like the things in the back of our cell phones, but they're just going to be bigger. And it's going to be part of it. And I think we could be cool with just saying, you know what, the market might figure it out on how the best ratepayers are going to do it. And, you know, we don't have to do this. So thanks.
Did you have a response, Representative Collins?
Just really briefly. I mean, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Swazinski. I mean, that's why we have it integrated into the IRPs. This is something that the PUC can approve, modify, or reject based on whether or not it's prudent for ratepayers. So I think in that same way, to your point, the PUC does oversee some aspects of this, and especially when we're talking about the goals that we're setting, they can reject a plan if it is not prudent to ratepayers. So in that way, we are protecting the ratepayers in the same system that we have.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we are getting this bill back, right? And we'll have a hearing on. Okay, so just a quick question, Mr. Eloff. we have different definitions of a public utility in this bill. Which definition of public utility are we using? I don't need the statutory reference. I just, who's it apply to?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, if you could point to me where those differences are, that might help.
So, Madam Chair, so for example, when we say when we use a public utility, the most recent example is Dakota Electric is the only rate-regulated co-op in the state, so they are a definition of a public utility in some terms. We sometimes refer to Xcel Energy as a separate public utility from other investor-owned utilities. So when I see on line 2.2 that it says a feeder line of a higher capacity, a public utility must install, which public utility, which definition of a public utility are we applying this to?
Mr. Ely.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, the definition of public utility in this bill, because, or at least those sections that deal with storage, are in Chapter 216B. So the definition that applies there is the one that applies to these provisions as well. The general definition of public utility, 216B.02 subdivision 4, which doesn't specifically call out Dakota Electric.
Representative Garofalo.
Is it all IOUs then, Mr. Ely?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, that's true, yes.
Okay, thank you. And then, Madam Chair, and again, we're getting this bill back so we can talk about it more, but from the advocates, I would expect Representative Hollins to know this. Language, or Section 2 seems pretty prescriptive. I mean, anytime this happens, they must do this. Can one of the advocates just describe for me why you chose this language in this fashion? I don't expect Representative Hollins to have to talk about that. Is there any advocate who wants to explain why?
And while people are thinking about it over there, Representative Hollins, did you have a response?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. It's okay. You can ask me.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, it says, Madam Chair and Representative Hollins, I'm not sure. It's sometimes, you know, a lot of times language is drafted for us to achieve a purpose.
Yeah.
And when I see this is, you know, any time that a feeder line with a higher capacity is being installed by any of the IOUs, they must install an energy storage system. I mean, that's pretty heavy. And so I'm just wondering what the story is.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. So I can answer this question for you because this was language that was held over from last year, although it actually included all of the utilities, not just IOUs at that point. And the reason we did that was because we didn't have a 100% clean energy goal. And so our idea with this was to get to a space where we were doing storage to make it prescriptive that when they were doing these upgrades to feeders, we would be including energy storage in it that way. Now that we have this 100% clean energy goal and because we have an energy storage goal in here, as I mentioned at the beginning, we anticipate removing this section entirely because we did get feedback from utilities that this is something that you're telling us how to get to a goal as opposed to just asking us to get to the goal. So, but that was the original, that's my understanding of the original reason, if I recall correctly.
And Madam Chair, either Representative Hollins or any of the advocates, Representative Hollins brought up the concerns about the market design in Minnesota. I'm wondering if any of the advocates, Representative Hollins, can point to a state that you believe Minnesota should be modeling that provides the market certainty and regulatory environment you'd like to see for energy storage.
Representative Hollins.
I'm going to defer to the advocates on that one.
Mr. O'Grady, just state your name to the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo, Logan O'Grady, Mencia. I think if you look at Xcel in Colorado, they're running similar programs that we have in this bill, an incentive program. They have a tariff definition for us. So Colorado is a good example. They're similar market size to us as well. We have a lot of overlap in our membership of companies doing business in both Colorado and Minnesota. So that is one example for you.
Thank you. And then, Mr. O'Grady, you don't have to answer this now, but I'm not familiar with how many states have the term here is deployment targets, but either a standard or a mandate. If you happen to know how many states have an energy storage standard or mandate or target, if you could just let me know, I'd appreciate it. If you happen to know it off your head, say it now. If you could just let me know.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, this was American Clean Power section of the bill, and they unfortunately couldn't be here today. I think there's 20-some states, perhaps, that have a goal, but I'll get you a more specific answer. I know this specific language was modeled after Virginia's legislation. We felt like if Virginia can do it, we can do it here in Minnesota. It's the most rigorous in the country for energy storage deployment targets, and we thought it was a great idea.
Madam Chair, if I could just, the difference between a goal and a mandate, if you happen to get that number, that'd be great. If you can't, I understand. Thank you.
Next on the list, we have Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Holland, thank you for bringing this bill. I think this is a really important topic and subject for us to dig into. I do want to comment one thing, you know, about the thumb on the scale comment. In this space, in our energy usage, the government in general has a long history of having its thumb on the scale around the deployment of fossil fuels, renewable energy. So I think we have to be careful about making those statements because that's the history we're dealing with here. That said, we will be getting this bill back. I just want to commend you for your work on it, for working to incorporate feedback. I think there's a lot of interesting issues and discussions that have been raised here that I look forward to hearing how they pan out when it comes back. But thank you.
Representative Igel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like everyone else, I'll be brief if we're going to get this bill back. But I do want to raise question to Section 11. When you start talking about environmental review, and if you're going to say on the line 8.1, the commission shall serve as responsible government unit for the project, preparation of an environmental impact statement may not be required for an energy storage system. Be careful. A lot of experience working with this stuff. If we're going to start changing up environmental review and all this stuff, I mean, this is opening yourself up for a lot of lawsuits for these companies that are going to be doing this. You know, this begs the conversation. We should be having some permitting reform and transparency if we're going to be able to get something like this through, because unfortunately, as the bill sits, if this goes into law, it's going to be caught up in court for years, from my experience in mining and timber. I just wanted to give that comment to you as you work on the bill.
And it will be going to the Environment Committee, so that's good place to talk about that. Representative Hollins.
That was exactly what I was going to say, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments from members? Seeing none, Representative Hollins renews her motion that House File 1386, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay.
No.
The motion prevails and the bill is re-referred. And with that, we are adjourned, folks. Everybody, be careful and don't hurt your backs shoveling.